Hello and welcome to DW's Conflict Zone podcast. I'm Tim Sebastian. And my guest this week is Adam Bodnar, a former human rights ombudsman in Poland and now the country's Minister of Justice. Is he poacher turned gamekeeper? At least some of the human rights groups seem to think so. If you enjoy the interview, please like and share it. Few countries are watching the war in Ukraine as closely as its neighbour Poland, so political movements in that country matter and could have significance way beyond its borders. The nine-month-old government of Donald Tusk won the European elections, but only beat the previous ruling party by one seat. In addition, the far-right party called the Confederation emerged as the most popular choice of young voters, those aged 18 to 29. So what went wrong? And how divided is Poland after 9 months of liberal democracy? How hard has it been to work with a president aligned to the old administration and apparently determined to act against the new one? Adam Bodnar, welcome to Conflict Zone.
Hello, good to see you.
When he won the election last year, your Prime Minister Donald Tusk told everyone, "This is the end of bad times. Poland won, democracy won." He spoke a little too soon, didn't he? Democracy is actually a long way from being won in Poland, isn't it?
But I think that after 8 years of being in the system of illiberal democracy or kind of a semi-authoritarian system, I think it was good to say those things, that we are going to be back on the democratic track. And that Donald Tusk, along with other coalition partners, is guaranteeing that we are going into the democratic direction. But of course, any period of transition requires a lot of time and energy to make it properly in order to make the democracy sustainable and long-term.
The fact is, though, you're still battling a state apparatus captured by the last government, judges loyal to the last ruling party, and a president aligned to them whose veto you're not powerful enough to overturn. So you have a lot of battles before you can claim victory, haven't you?
That's true, but basically I think the worst case scenario should be to say that we cannot do just anything and just wait for the change of the president. So we have to reform institutions. And interestingly, you can make a lot of reforms, not only waiting for the adoption of legislative acts, but also by simply making like a profound, deep discussion of those drafts, as well as by making different personal changes, as well as accountability processes in Poland these days. So basically, that is my task. On the one hand, to go forward with institutional reforms. On the other hand, to make deeper changes in those fields where it is possible to do it in accordance with law.
I appreciate you want to make changes and you want reforms, but the president, Andrzej Duda, has actively worked against you. In January, he was in fact sheltering in the presidential palace two former law and justice ministers who'd been convicted of abuse of power. Were you surprised that he'd go to such lengths to try to thwart your government?
You know, I think this case was a very special one, and on the one hand, it illustrates the power of enforcement of law. On the other hand, it shows that president was basically caught in a little bit like a political and institutional trap. On the one hand, please note, it is the verdict of the court that has been given in the end of December 2023. After a number of years of legal fights that were based on the evaluation of so-called first pardoning made by Mr. President. So interestingly, President of Poland, Andrzej Duda, made a pardon already in 2015 regarding Mr. Wąsik and Mr. Kamiński, although it was a pardoning made after the court of first instance. And interestingly, after 8 years, it was possible to achieve a verdict of the court of second instance saying that the pardoning by president did not matter.
I understand, but it was a huge challenge to you, wasn't it? And I'm wondering, since the president's term runs out the middle of next year, how your government will coexist with him until then.
Yeah, but please note that in this situation, those two gentlemen were put in prison. And they were released after 2 weeks of being in prison, after the second pardoning of the president.
Did you underestimate how hard it was going to be to dismantle the apparatus installed by the Law and Justice Party? Your deputy, Arkadiusz Mircea, called the damage to Poland's legal system a catastrophe. It runs deep on a systemic level. He said this isn't a task that'll take months or a year. It's going to take an entire term of office to undo. If you're to keep your coalition together, you're going to have to show some results, though, pretty quickly, aren't you?
That's true that this process could be long-term, and it may last for longer than just a couple of months. Please note that this system of illiberal power has been built over 8 years. So just dismantling this, including some personal changes, it cannot take place just within a couple of weeks or months. But I think one of the important things for us, and basically there is like a huge pressure on those things, is accountability. So interestingly, for a number of people in Poland, it is not that important whether those institutions are working properly again or not, but it is important that people that were abusing power, that were simply stealing money, that were abusing public funds for political purposes, are facing responsibility for those crimes they've committed.
And are they? And are they? Or will they?
We do everything in accordance with law. But interestingly, just a couple of weeks ago, I have submitted one motion to lift the parliamentary immunity to one of the deputy ministers. There is another motion under preparation. There are a lot of different cases pending. We are going to also make accountability for so-called smear and hate campaign against Polish judges. So I would say that it takes time, but I think we see with every week that some results are delivered. Of course, even lifting judicial immunity, even submission of the bill of indictment does not mean full accountability, because you must have a judgment of the court of the final judgment of the court. But still, I think from the point of view of the Polish people, if they see that things are going on, that things are going forward, it is already quite important for their perspective on what is happening right now in Poland.
One of President Duda's advisors said that removing the 3,000 judges appointed during the previous government's tenure could cause huge legal problems and could undermine huge numbers of rulings that they've made. She's right, isn't she?
I think you mean Madame Małgorzata Paprocka, who is the chief of the chancellery of the president of Poland. Of course, she's right. But please note that the status of those judges is quite differentiated. Some of them are so-called, I name them, rookie judges. So those judges who are fresh graduates of the school for National School for Judiciary and Prosecution Service, and they didn't have any other opportunity than just to become judges upon nomination of the National Council of Judiciary. Some other are people that have made a choice of being candidates for higher judicial positions by this National Council of Judiciary. So I think that one of my tasks is to find like the best way to make a vetting of those judges. And second, to make this vetting in such a way as not to undermine finality of judgments that have been issued with respect with their participation. Because if we would challenge any and all judgments issued by them, then of course it would mean a chaos in the legal system. So that's why it is the issue that requires a deep reflection. I'm going to ask the Venice Commission for the deeper evaluation of different procedures for vetting of judges. And I know that I have to meet here like two conflicting values. On the one hand, judicial independence. On the other hand, judicial and legal stability in Poland.
But there is a danger that your efforts at reform could cause chaos and actually paralyze the justice system, couldn't you?
There is always such a risk, but you know that is the reason why we should predict the outcome of things, and we shouldn't go too quickly with those changes. And second, you know, here we know well that with Mr. President, with this president, we cannot make any vetting of judges, because he claims that all the judicial nominations that were made by him are valid and without any are made without any flaws, as compared to the position of the Court of Justice of the EU and the European Court of Human Rights. Both courts claim that there is a flaw in this judicial nomination, so we have to repair this flaw. But that's why we need to have some time in order to make like a proper process of vetting of those judges.
Mr. Bodnar, despite your election win, Poland remains deeply divided, doesn't it? In last year's election, your civic coalition actually got fewer votes than the Law and Justice Coalition, 6.6 million to 7.6 million. And more than 30% of the electorate didn't support either bloc, since they preferred the smaller parties. Not very encouraging, was it?
I think that we are very satisfied with the result of the parliamentary elections. I think nobody believed in the success of the Democratic coalition. I think right now, when we are after local elections and the European Parliament elections, we have like deeper reflection on what people expect. Of course, Polish politics is very divided, and we see still quite strong position of the Law and Justice Party and also some, let's say, alternative right-wing parties. But I think, our task is simply to deliver on different reforms. We have to take care about not only rule of law, but also about LGBT plus rights, women's rights too. But I think what is, for me personally, important is that we should take care about some level of honesty, integrity, professionalism in the public life. So in all different instances of my work, I try to show that conduct those policies with the respect to those basic principles of openness, transparency, and dignity.
Minister, you mentioned the European elections. Your group beat Law and Justice, but only just. You get to send 21 MEPs to Brussels, but they'll send 20, less than last time, but only one seat behind you. Doesn't this show that your democracy, at least for now, is a pretty fragile construct, and a lot of the country doesn't support you, especially your liberal attitudes on issues like abortion and same-sex marriage? That has to limit your scope for maneuver, doesn't it?
I think it is. I think there was, this kind of approach before European elections that the parties that are forming the ruling coalition should not create divisive topics in the politics, that we shouldn't move in the discussion regarding future of Poland into those topics that are not only dividing lines between the ruling party, but also and the justice, but also that there are like different scopes. There are different views on those issues by parties forming the ruling coalition. But I think right now it's clear that we have to deliver, that we have to make different changes. So, for example, right now, even today, we have some another serious discussion concerning same-sex registered partnerships. Maybe we would not have same-sex marriage yet, but for sure there is a. I think we are getting closer to adopt law on the same-sex registered partnership. Maybe the law on the gender recognition, because right now you can make a correction of a gender by virtue of the court jurisprudence, but we do not have like a proper legislative procedure for this. And surely we have to put more emphasis on respect for women's rights.
The bad news for you in the European elections was the fact that the Eurosceptic Confederation emerged as the most popular party in Poland among young voters, the 18 to 29 years old. How much does that worry you?
I'm worried because I think that we should talk to a younger generation using their perspective, their language, and their way of thinking. And in my opinion, we are maybe a little bit missing this kind of vision, how to talk about liberal values, how to talk about Europe to young voters. I will just give you an example. I'm 47. I remember when, in order to cross the border of Poland, you have to, have passports, visas, when it was not that easy, when, the so-called Western country was regarded as a kind of a miracle for us, okay? If you look into the young generation, they don't even know what is the passport about, okay? They are just traveling from, Warsaw to Barcelona just with ID. They don't understand what is like the real added value of the European Union, what is the added value of the free exchange of goods or movement of people, and that the European Union is giving us a sense of security. So, if you have air and you breathe with this air every day, you don't feel the necessity of taking care about this air, that this air should be clean. And in such an environment, it is much easier for right-wing parties to kind of create a feeling of fear a danger, or even to make some, you know, quite a propaganda type of argumentation that is much more attractive to young voters.
You mentioned the European Union. In January, you said the Union was extremely important for Poland. Brussels is an instrument for good, not a destroyer. So we have a great loyalty to it. But this loyalty didn't extend really to the EU's reformed asylum and migration policy, the new pact as it's known. You simply repeated the same veto as the previous government. We'll protect Poland against the relocation mechanism, is how Donald Tusk put it. So much for the promise to reset relations. This is only a partial reset, isn't it?
I would say that we have a full reset. Come on, you know, for me, from my perspective.
Well, you rejected the pact. You rejected the pact.
Please let me tell what I'm thinking about, okay? From my perspective, being the Minister of Justice, the EU money from the EU recovery plan has been unblocked. That's the first thing. Second, Article 7 of the treaty is not any longer in use regarding Poland. So basically, we are not regarded as a country in which there is a serious risk of further undermining of the rule of law. I think with asylum and migration pact, it was quite obvious argument presented by the Polish government that basically Poland has accepted more than 1 million refugees from Ukraine. We are taking a burden of hosting refugees. We are taking a huge burden of supporting the war you fought in Ukraine. And basically, there was the political argument behind the decision on the asylum and migration pact.
I understand that, but in vetoing the new pact, you've upset the same human rights organizations that used to work closely with you when you were human rights ombudsman, especially since Polish border guards are once again being accused of mistreating migrants and pushing them back illegally. The refugee charity, the Ocalenia Foundation, called your government's stance shameful and said it continued the policy of law and justice. Most people who run away, it added, are fleeing from violence, war and persecution. The old Adam Bodnar wouldn't have put up with that, would he?
No. Please know that I participate quite often in different meetings of different internal bodies within the government dealing with security, with the border security, with internal affairs, and also taking into account what is happening on the border in the context of the war, of the Russian aggression on Ukraine. And first, we don't have any doubt that the situation, that the difficult situation at the border is the result of so-called hybrid war, which is instigated by Russia and Belarus regarding, and it aims towards the stabilization of the situation in such countries as Poland.
But you are accused of illegal pushbacks.
No. But second thing, you know, quite a majority of people that are crossing the border, they are not interested in staying in Poland, but they are just interested in moving forward to Germany or to other EU countries. So they don't want even to be registered. And I know that with respect to those ones who wants to be registered, would like to stay in Poland and to seek for the international protection mechanisms, they are served with the proper care and they can stay in Poland.
You say that, but Human Rights Watch demanded in March that you grant access to the Polish asylum procedure for foreigners who are seeking it, repeal unlawful border regulations that legalize pushbacks, and stop criminal prosecution and harassment of civil society activists trying to help asylum seekers at the border. Is all that too much to ask?
I think that Polish government is doing everything what should be done in order to put a proper balance between the needs of the Polish security and the right and the respect for fundamental rights of those seeking for the protection.
And the old Adam Bodnar would have been satisfied with that, would he?
As I said, I'm being the Minister of Justice, I support the policy of the government in this field.
Let's look, if we may, at Russian activities in Poland. The Prime Minister announced 9 arrests of people alleged to have plotted acts of sabotage in Poland in coordination with Russian intelligence. Do you have a solid case against these people?
You know, I'm the prosecutor general, and I know some of those cases. You know, I remember one of the of those cases, which was quite interesting from many different angles. It was a plot concerning getting access to the different security procedures and information regarding the airport in Rzeszów. And the guy who has been caught was a guy collaborating with the GRU, and basically this whole action was possible thanks to the cooperation of the Polish and Ukrainian secret services, as well as Polish and Ukrainian prosecutors' office.
So the GRU being Russian military intelligence.
Excuse me?
GRU being Russian military intelligence.
He has been infiltrated by the Russian intelligence, and you know, and those cases that were about putting fire in different places, there were also cases like this. So one of the most important cases was the case near Wrocław, where the guy was going to put fire under the factory of paints, painting materials, and fortunately he has been stabbed before doing this by the Polish secret services. So you know, it is quite a new phenomenon for us that we have that kind of new cases of espionage in Poland, you know, and for us also what is quite important, new and very radical one is that one of the Polish judges decided to emigrate from Poland, Mr. Tomasz Schmidt, and he started to cooperate with Belarusian forces. So he has been immediately expelled from the judicial position, and he has been deprived of the judicial immunity, and right now there is a European arrest warrant after him issued.
Let's talk about the war in Ukraine, if we may. From your vantage point, what are the chances Ukraine will lose?
You know, I think that I would extend my competence to comment on such issues. Please note that I deal with a lot of issues, but I'm still Minister of Justice, Prosecutor General, but I'm not the Minister of Foreign Affairs, or I'm not a political or geopolitical strategist or analyst.
You talked earlier about the hybrid war that Russia is waging in Poland. Is this, in your view, standard Kremlin interference or part of a bigger plan?
Yes, I know that you would like to hear from me some more general argumentation regarding this, but you know, that is the reason we have a great expert on those issues, Mr. Radosław Sikorski, who has a deep knowledge about international relations and the understanding of different Russian influences.
But you know, some of the cases of the nine who've been arrested.
Yeah. But maybe I will just tell you about one more thing, because I think it should be important. You know, one of the important initiatives of this government and the Prime Minister Donald Tusk was the creation of a special committee, kind of advisory body, to investigate different forms of Russian influence on Polish soil. And this committee has been created just 2 weeks ago. It is composed of experts from different fields, from foreign relations, from disinformation, economics, and economy side. There are also lawyers in this group, and I think its role could be quite interesting to evaluate what are the other possibilities or other methods rather of influencing the Polish public discourse. So, for example, I see that there is a lot of disinformation that is spreading quite easily in the Polish discourse that could be a result of the Russian plot. Or we can see that there were some activities to have a deeper influence on the energy sector or on different fields of economy. So I think it's quite important, in my opinion, in the context of the Polish debate, is to kind of look deeply into different forms and methods of Russian influence on daily political life.
This committee that you talked about, how alarmed is it about what it's seeing in Poland?
Excuse me, once again?
This committee that you mentioned, which is monitoring Russian activities in Poland, how alarmed is it about what it's seeing?
I don't know yet what could be the result of the work of this committee. It has just started the work, but there is a strong pressure by the Prime Minister Donald Tusk, by the Minister of Interior, that this committee would be quite hardworking and powerful in terms of signaling different threats. Because my feeling is that sometimes we do not appreciate to what extent, I don't know, some theories of Dugin, one of those, you know, architects of this Euro-Asiatic vision of the world, are later on translated into the daily politics of in different EU member states, including Poland, or how different methods of disinformation are used on a daily basis. So my feeling is that the work of this committee could have also some importance for other EU countries, just to look what are the potential and actual ways of influencing the public discourse in different countries.
Adam Bodnar, thank you very much for being on Conflict Zone. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
If you enjoyed the interview, please subscribe to the podcast and give Conflict Zone a review on your preferred platform. From all of us on the team, thanks for listening.